There are countless gadgets, inventions, and items that never make their way onto store shelves or into our homes, or quite possibly onto commonly used websites. Some aren't quite interesting or practical enough, while others could appeal to our imaginations, but only for a short time. And of course, some have that serendipitous combination of value, support, and timing to become part of most of our lives. To learn more about why certain ideas or companies succeed broadly, while others may not, I spoke with Cameron Albert Deitch via Skype. He's an assistant editor for Inc.com. I started our conversation by asking him what factors can make the greatest difference in having a successful product or business, especially in the tech realm.
Well, I think there are three general paths that these kinds of trends or products or whatever it happens to be, three different kinds of growth paths that tend to be the most common. The first is that something starts really small and it just sort of slowly grows bigger and bigger by entry to new markets, sometimes by, usually, honestly, by word of mouth or by strategic choice. But it starts local and then it grows regional and then it grows national and then it grows international. And it's this very incremental geographic thing. Are you familiar with the company Rover.com? I know we're all sick of the Uber of X, but they are basically the Uber of pet care. You probably know them from their dog walking commercials, which they're all over TV and Hulu, and they started really local. They were founded in Seattle, and they focused hyper-locally on Seattle at the very beginning. They had five employees, including the founders and CEO, and they would literally go, those five employees would literally go to dog parks in Seattle and strike up conversations with owners, and that's how they were attempting to grow the company. And at a certain point, that sort of struck them as inefficient and sort of ridiculous, like definitely a little bit silly. And they realized they needed to expand outside of Seattle, and they needed to take a little bit of a different approach. And so they entered a few test markets, and those test markets went reasonably well, but they still weren't getting the kind of momentum that they wanted. So they basically made a leap of faith and decided that the momentum from the test markets was just enough that they hoped and they thought it would carry them into this national market. They could just go. They could just do it. They could just jump off the deep end and open in every major city in the US and see what happened. And it's clearly turned out pretty well for them. The business model is exactly the same as it always was, but they made that very incremental, they followed that very incremental path almost to a T. Local to regional to national and now international.
And another category, which certainly Twitter falls into, I know there are many, many other examples of it, that almost feels like it's going to be for a niche audience, but then something occurs and it becomes something that seems usable or at least interesting to a lot more people. And part of that to me almost sounds like luck. And yet when people start businesses, I imagine many of them are thinking big. They're thinking, well, I'm going to start off with a niche, but something's going to help this take fire. So Twitter's an example. Is there another one that comes to mind that's sort of like that?
Yes. And by the way, I think Twitter is a perfect example. I'm really glad that you sort of pulled that out. This is going to be an incredibly obscure example. The company is not that big, but it's growing very quickly. And the reason that it comes to mind is because I only recently wrote about it. There's this company in Tucson, Arizona called Spartan Armor Systems. They sell body armor. They sell steel and ceramic and a whole bunch of different types of body armors to law enforcement agencies, among others. And it was founded in 2012 by this guy, Jeremy Tepper, who literally had a one-man in a garage side gig out of this. He was selling steel-plated body armor primarily to survivalists and preppers on eBay. Jeremy made $1.2 million in revenue in 2014, and no one knew it because the books were a nightmare. They were a pile of invoices and receipts in the side panel of Jeremy's truck. And they managed to backtrack and see this incredible opportunity. And it was these two guys, Meeks and Stranaka, who brought the business acumen to take this concept and apply it in a radically different way. They pivoted their strategy entirely. They changed their core demographic entirely. They now sell, pretty sure it's more than 50%, to law enforcement now. And they're aiming on, Todd Meeks is now the sole owner of the company. And he's aiming to get it up to 75% to law enforcement. It's this much more profitable, much more reliable, much more legitimate way of doing business. And in doing that, it's become one of the fastest growing companies in America. Between 2014 and 2017, their revenue grew 403%.
There are so many good products. There are a lot of people with great ideas. There's also the factor of timing. There's the factor of finding the right investor, the right niche. How often does this just happen that timing and luck or opportunity just sort of come together as they do in life generally, and they come together for certain products or certain businesses? Is it almost, not entirely, almost impossible to predict which of these will actually catch fire? Not that they're good or better, but that they actually catch fire because the timing or the right person finds out about it.
I think that's absolutely right. I think you summed it up really well, that it's not enough to be good, and it's not enough to be smart, and it's not enough to be talented, and it's not enough to be to have a great business acumen and a mind for marketing and a great business partner or any of these things that go into a successful startup. You also, on top of it all, have to be incredibly lucky and have incredibly good timing. And that is really hard to do, especially because that factor you can't really control. There are cautionary tales all over the place. We always hear of companies that people say, gosh, they were so ahead of their time. If only they had been born 10 years later, they would have made something of themselves. And then you see success stories of companies that sort of struggled and pushed until their big break came because the timing was finally right. The basic infrastructure for what they were trying to do didn't necessarily exist when they started the company. They were ahead of their time in a way. And then they managed to hang on long enough that infrastructure then became a reality and they were able to grab a foothold and take off.
Cameron Albert Deitch is an assistant editor for Inc.com.